Good morning. This is Scott Mitchell with a radio program called Let the Bible Speak. If you are new to this, I work with the church at El Bethel and been there about a year and a half, which didn't even seem possible. Gray's been there and been working, just trying to get back to what the Bible says, which is where we got the name for the radio show called Let the Bible Speak. And then Theron Hall's done got us going on Facebook. We've got a website called letthebiblespeak.faith, and you can go there and upload it. He's uploaded all the talks on there. We've done for the last, I guess we've celebrated 6 months of radio, or six, how, what did he say? Did he say 6 months of radio last week, I think? Which is crazy. I have with me today two roses with a thorn in the middle, Michael W. and Mikey B. Michael W. Stout is a member at Galena and served as a deacon over there and as a kind friend and a good Bible student and comes from good stock in regards to that, and we're going to talk about a lot this morning. On my right, it sounds like I'm introducing fighters for if I don't know them. And then in the red corner, we're
fighting for the good.
We have Mikey B, Mike Bozeman. He is a preacher at New Salisbury, and they're getting ready to go to Portugal, I think, to do some work over there. And glad to have them both with me this morning.
Thanks, Scott.
You guys want to say anything before we start?
Just always a joy to be here and to talk about the Bible with you.
Isn't that great?
Absolutely. Encouraging way to start.
I got asked to speak Sunday night. We're going to a camp, and I got asked to speak Sunday night. And so I picked a lesson I did at El Bethel about a year and a half ago about Lot. And I wanted to go through that this morning and kind of help me prepare for it. Sunday night also, that's an excellent lesson about Lot and his decisions. One big decision he made quite an impact on his life. I know we have Alan Blusigzer. Blusig was on about 2 to 5 minutes before the show started. Well, Jeff Farmer must be camping again today or something because he's on. But he always has an excuse not come on the show. Last week he was camping. So anyway, glad to have you all here. By the way, Mike, I was talking last night, and we just got done with our meeting with Dan Langford.
That's right.
And I'm
great
thinking,
week. Great.
I was looking at you and him. You both have the head thing going on. And here's what I figured out. If Mike would change the shape of his head just a little bit, right? Change the color of his eyes, smile a little differently and grow a beard, he'd look just like Dan Langford. But anyway, that's all.
Dan's older than him.
Much older.
Langford's older than you? I'm not going to argue that. Anyway, we had a really good meeting last week.
We did. Absolutely.
So let's get over to Genesis and get going on this. Probably a lot of people listening may know about Lot, and we're going to talk about a few things. Mikey B, would you read Genesis 12, 1 through 8? And what we want to notice in this is where Lot is when we first get introduced to him. Okay. All right, if you would read those verses for us.
Sure. Genesis chapter 12, verses 1 to 8.
Yep.
The Lord said to Abram, leave your country, your people, and your father's household, and go to the land that I'll show you. I'll make you into a great nation, and I'll bless you. I will make your name great, and you'll be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you and curse those who curse you. On all the peoples on the earth will be blessed through you. So Abram left, as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he set out from Haran. He took his wife Sarai, his nephew Lot, and all the possessions they accumulated, and the people they had acquired in Haran. And they set out for the land of Canaan, and they arrived there. Abram traveled through the land as far as the site of the great tree of Morah at Shechem. At the time when the Canaanites were in the land, the Lord appeared to Abram and said, to your offspring I will give this land. So he built an altar there to the Lord, who had appeared to him. From there he went on to the hills east of Bethel and pitched his tent, with Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. There he built an altar to the Lord, and then called on the name of the Lord. And then Abram set out and continued to the Negev.
Where is Lot?
He's evidently traveling along with Abraham and his.
Wherever Abraham is,
that's right.
That's where Lot is. And it seems like a fairly safe place for him. 13 verse 1 says, so Abram went from Egypt, he and his wife and all that he had, and Lot with him. And in verse 5, I think I have marked, it says, and Lot went with Abram, also had flocks and herds and tents, which is getting into the situation, right? But every time we see Lot, he's with Abraham. But things are going pretty well for him when he's with Abraham. So we know the story. Tell me what happens between Lot, people and his herds and herdmen and all that, and then Abraham's people. What's going on?
Well, we see there in 13, verse 2, and Abram was very rich in cattle and silver and gold, and we see that Lot, he also had possessions, and their herdsmen, there were so many and so many things that there was conflict between the herdsmen, so they decided it was time to part ways so that everybody wasn't on top of one another.
So go ahead and read 13, 8, and 9, just so we know what happens here.
Genesis 13, beginning in verse 8. And Abram said unto Lot, let there be no strife, I pray thee, between me and thee, and between my herdmen and thy herdmen, for we be brethren. Is not the whole land before thee? Separate thyself, I pray thee, from me. If thou wilt take the left hand, then I will go to the right. Or if thou depart to the right hand, then I will go to the left.
Now, what did we read earlier? Who did God say this land was? He's going to give it to who?
Abraham.
Abraham, yeah. So Abraham takes his land and says, take what, bub? Let's just, you go your way, I'll go mine. You pick where you want to go, and I'll go the other direction. Which is generous.
Right.
And 10 and 11 reveal where this whole mess starts. Lot had a decision to make, like we all have decisions to make. And I'll go ahead and read 10 and 11 just to finish that up. It's just kind of heartbreaking. And Lot lifted up his eyes and saw that the Jordan Valley was well watered everywhere, like the garden of the Lord. Now I'm reading from the English Standard Version. I know you're reading from King James, right?
King James.
What are you reading from?
New International.
So it may should all say the same thing, but it may sound a little different. So that's there's some translation things, but it should be fine. So, and Lot lifted up his eyes and saw that the Jordan Valley was well watered everywhere, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt. In the direction of Zoar, there was before the Lord that this was before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. So Lot chose for himself all the Jordan Valley, and Lot journeyed east, and thus they separated from each other. And verse 12 says, Abram settled in the land of Canaan, while Lot settled among the cities of the valley, and moved his tent as far as Sodom. Now the men of Sodom were wicked, great sinners against the Lord. What was Lot's motivation for choosing to go that direction?
Well, it said in verse 10, he looked up and he saw. Mm-hmm. Yes. So he looked over all the land. So he's going to walk by, he's going to walk by sight. He sees the best stuff. He sees a lot of potential, but he makes his choice.
I think it was Helen Keller that said the worst tragedy is someone with sight but no vision. Something like that. What did now Lot saw a lot of things, but what did he not pay attention to?
Didn't pay attention to the wickedness there of Sodom, because in 13, the men of Sodom were wicked and sinners before the Lord. Not just wicked, but exceedingly.
Now, we're going to quickly go through some things, and you ought to write these things down, just to kind of introduce that from this moment on, Lot's life is absolutely miserable. And so we see in 14, in chapter 14, 1 through 16, that Lot is taken captive by some enemies of Sodom. So Uncle Abe says, hey, let's go get the boy. He goes and rescues him and brings him back. And we're going to go read a little bit of chapter 19. And what happens is some angels come to Lot's house in Sodom. And go ahead. You got a thought?
Well, is that where we're going next? Chapter 19?
Yeah, well, just kind of going through some things in his life. Please add.
I might go back to say I think the trouble started maybe even back before that, because Abraham was sent by God mm-hmm. to live in Canaan, and when that famine came in Canaan, Abraham made a decision. Mm-hmm. And his decision was not to stay in the land, but he went down to Egypt.
Yeah.
And when he went down to Egypt, he took Lot with him, because like you said earlier, Lot came back. So a lot of things happened. That was not a decision that was really a good decision for Abraham. Mm-hmm. It was not made in faith. He didn't trust God.
Yeah.
He went there. Well, he took his family down there, and when they came back, we know that was a big mess in Egypt.
Right.
And he came back, they both came back wealthy men. That's how Lot became wealthy. Mm-hmm. And you might think about it, here was Abraham who did not walk by faith. He chose to go stay in Egypt for a period of time. He experienced Egypt, and Lot participated in that. Mm-hmm. I mean, we influence people in ways that we don't expect. Mm-hmm. They both came back wealthy.
Yep.
they're back in the land, and now they can't work together because they have too much stuff.
And it's interesting, the difference, you know, every time we see Abraham moving, he's building an altar. He's building an altar. He's he's trying to do the right thing for God,
right,
in the right ways there. And I didn't go back that far, and I'm, that's good. I mean, with all those decisions that these people have made are influencing, really, the young people around them and the people that are with them and what they're seeing and we do the same things.
Absolutely. It's all about choices and the consequences with those choices.
And
I think as we start talking about this event, that this proves the old adage, the grass is greener on the other side.
Maybe where this came from.
Absolutely. Yeah. In verse 10 there of chapter 13, it was the green grass, the well-watered parts of Jordan, which literally enticed Lot and made him choose that.
And you might notice he connects it to, he says, like the land of Egypt.
Yeah.
In other words, Lot would have never known that.
Right.
Had he not gone down there.
So when we look at all these possessions that they have, and obviously want to keep them, because Abraham and Lot didn't sit down and say, how are we going to work this out? You know, we should be able to stay together. They said, let's separate so there won't be any trouble. So they could keep all they had. And again, we're all guilty of having stuff.
Right.
I mean, I've got garage full of stuff. I haven't had time to do anything with it. I've got saws, I've got table saws, I've got chop saws, I've got regular arm saws, I've got chainsaws, I've got all, I don't even use any of it right now.
Right.
And so I don't have, you know, it would probably, I'm not inviting anybody to do this, but I'd probably be better off if somebody that took it. But
I might borrow some of it.
I have through the years.
Yes, you have a trip.
Good stuff.
I'll give you the keys to mine. Anyway, these decisions were that changed these guys' lives, absolutely wrecked Lot's life.
And I think I have to remember, too, that God chose Abram, not because Abram is perfect, but he was going to teach him what it meant to walk by faith.
Yep.
So Abram goes down and he makes some bad decisions. Abram was not a flawless man. He's never justified by flawless obedience. And so we see him learning through this process. God had a bigger picture in mind, obviously, through Abraham bring the Christ. But all along the way, he's going to teach this family what it means to walk by faith.
Yep.
And in the midst of that, they're going to learn some consequences of when they chose not to do that.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Abraham's learned some hard lessons. I think when he comes back to Canaan from Egypt, he builds that altar. He's coming back to God.
Yeah.
But there's some side effects of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
I know, Scott, you had pointed out earlier, you know, this, as we're studying these events, especially in the Old Testament, we see over in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, 11, and also in Romans, that these examples are for us to learn. And we're not much different. We have to make choices every day of whatever it is in our lives, who we marry, you know, where we go to school, what job.
And we're going to get
to talk about that more. But
let's go through these things that happened in Lot's life and then look at why. We need to talk about discernment if we're going to end up in life.
Right.
So in 19, this is absolutely mind-boggling. You have children, and you have children.
Yes.
And we've talked a lot about, on this show, about black and white for a moment or gray for a lifetime. And this must be one of those situations where Lot was thinking, well, this sin is not as bad as that. And it kind of became gray to him, or something happened. Because what he does is offer his daughters to the men of the city. And in we'll just read four verses from 19. It says, but the angels come to his house, and the men of the city come to Lot's house at night. It says in verse 4, before they lay down, the men of the city, the men of Sodom, both young and old, all the people to the last man, that's a harsh thing right there, surrounded the house. And they called Lot, where are the men who came to you tonight? Bring them out to us that we may know them, and we know what it means to know somebody. And Lot went out to the men at the entrance, shut the door behind him. So Lot stepped out on this porch with these people and shut the door. He puts himself in peril here as well. I beg you, my brothers, do not act so wickedly. Behold, I have two daughters who have not known any man. Let me bring them out to you and do to them as you please. Only do nothing to these men, for they have come under the shelter of my roof. But they said, stand back. And they said, this fellow came to sojourn, and he has become our judge. Now we will deal worse with you than with them. Then they pressed hard against the man, Lot, and drew near to break down the door. But the men reached out their hands and brought Lot into the house with them and shut the door. And they struck with blindness the men who were at the entrance of the house, both small and great, so that they were themselves out groping for the door. So these men of the city were blinded to stop this. What would it take, guys? Both of you have daughters. What would it take for you to offer your daughter to somebody to do something?
Absolutely no way. I mean, this is heinous.
We know that in 2 Peter, Lot is called righteous. We'll go read that later. This situation, again, black and white for a moment or gray for a lifetime, one of these, he grayed this situation out to gray. I don't think I can figure out, is that what they were wanting to do was so wicked?
Right.
It would not be quite as bad for them to take his daughters and do this. Then in 24, he loses all of, why did he go to Sodom to begin with? Because he had a lot of what?
He was moving that direction because of all the things.
We know in verse 24, he loses all that. He loses in verse 26, he loses his wife. And in 19, 30 through 38, his daughter's getting drunk because they figured they're all alone, nobody to have kids with. His daughter's getting drunk and have incest with him, and they both end up having a child by their dad. There's no TV show that could do this. This could create a situation that's absolutely crazy.
I mean, you've got to realize from the root of it that all of our decisions impact our lives and they have consequences. And it just started with the decision that he wanted to go to the east, to Jordan, and then towards Sodom and Gomorrah. And then it just snowball effect, you know, one bad decision after another. And these consequences, as you said, he loses it all. His wife turns back. She turns into the pillar of salt. And then this debauchery, even with his daughters, that they get him drunk and sleep with him.
And why? Why was this? I mean,
well, he didn't walk by faith; he was walking by sight.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it just the decisions weren't based on it. At what point do we see Lot go to Abraham and say, "Hey, what would you do? Or give me some advice here." Did he pray to God? Did he ask God what he should do? Do we see any evidence of those kind of things in his life? At least in the text.
No, it appears more that he is dwelling on the physical, the carnal things.
And we're going to get into a lot of topics here, what we'll think about, because I think what he lacked in this, one of the things he lacked in this, was this discernment to be able to stop and think, okay, to distinguish good and evil, and what are the consequences of me making this decision? And when we as dads make decisions, it affects the wife, it affects the kids, it affects all of us in the family. So I want to really talk about three different areas, and it's going to cover probably a lot of what you all want to talk about. But one of the things, and we can talk about this, as dads and as parents, this is to talk about as parents, we have to have an attitude of unselfishness. Did Lot have that?
No.
He didn't
chose
seem
for himself.
Yeah. That's verse 11. That's exactly what he said. It's all about the money.
You know, it's interesting because I think Abraham here is in great contrast. Because he shows a tremendous amount of faith. He said, you know, you choose. And, you know, think about God had given that land to him. So really, rightfully, that was his choice. He was the leader of the family. He had a right to that. And so when he said, you make the choice, he was willing to say, I'm going to let the Lord work this out. And I guess if Lot had been where he should have been, he would have said, this is your place. You know, this is what God gave you. You know, Uncle Abe, you make the choice, and I'll do what you want me to do. But, you know, I think we can be, when we look at things and we become kind of captivated by a lot of the things that we see, think about how ourselves, and it's hard to deny yourself things.
Yep.
And it's further, like you said, if Lot you kind of scan the whole scope of the story of, he could have looked down the road from where he was back in chapter 13, verse 11, and seen some of the consequences of the decision, he would probably not make that decision.
Hopefully not.
Yeah. You know, we don't do that.
Right.
We're walk, and, you know, God's word is, helps us walk by faith. That would help us to make these choices. We have these story. We have this nice hindsight. We can stand here or above it all.
Which,
and we can look at the whole picture.
Why we have it.
Yeah.
So we can learn from this.
We see, you know, it seems as Lot had the tunnel vision. He was looking at the here and now, and I like this. I'm going, doing this,
so,
and not looking at the big picture.
Have y'all known anybody's marriages that have been wrecked? Because, you know, let's bring this home to right now. We look at this. Does selfishness ever ruin a marriage?
Sure.
Oh, absolutely.
When people cheat on the spouse, that's nothing but blatant selfishness, period. What about churches? Y'all ever been involved in churches where people got selfish and split a church over dumb stuff like color curtains or rather pad the pews or what color the carpet ought to be and things that really don't matter? I was involved in a situation one time, somebody put curtains up in the church building, somebody else didn't like them, so instead of dealing with it, they just took the curtains down and they didn't have any curtains. So
there you go, you got nothing to hide.
And people say, well, I fell out of love. All right, they don't understand what love is, but all these things stem from selfishness. I ever one of them do because if, well, Philippians 2, we wouldn't even go, I'll read it. Philippians 2, 3 through 6. If we as parents and neighbors and sons and daughters and everybody would keep this in mind, I think it would go a long way. In 2 Peter chapter 2, verses 3 through 6, it says, do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit. There's, you already said, that's hard for us to do. Do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourselves. Let each of you look not only to his own interests, but also to the interests of others. Have this mind among yourselves, which is yours in Christ Jesus, who though he was in the form of God, did not count equality with God a thing to be grasped. What is that? What are those verses asking us to do?
We're here to serve others, to show our love for the Lord by helping and serving others. And first and foremost, not serving ourselves. It's not about us.
I talked last week. I don't know. I may have been as a church or I don't know where I was, but I was listening to a CD and somebody made the comment that somebody asked him or made the comment about getting to heaven being hard. And what's the only thing that makes that? In the context of this verse, is the only thing that would make getting to heaven difficult for us?
Well, being a servant and denying yourself.
That's the hard thing.
That's hard.
That's the hard. Getting ourselves out of the way. That's the hardest. It's not that God's made it hard, but he's asked us to do something which people don't like to do, and that's put ourselves in the back row. And put everybody else first. And we don't like this. People, especially Americans, you know,
right.
We don't like doing that.
And we've got to think, you know, Christ made the ultimate sacrifice, and the sacrifice that God is asking of us is minimal compared to sacrifice of Christ dying on the cross. But we've got to do it for the Lord and not think of it as work. You know, it is work, but, you know, if we love the Lord, we're going to do what it takes to serve him.
I was thinking about this verse. You mentioned 2 Peter. So I was just reading.
We're heading back, but go ahead.
Oh, no.
No, go ahead and read it because we need to get to it anyway. So
okay, so you said 2 Peter chapter 2.
Yeah.
So I'm reading beginning in verse 7.
Yeah.
That God had rescued Lot, and he said, as you said earlier, a righteous man who was distressed by the filthy lives of lawless men. For that righteous man living among them day after day was tormented in his righteous soul by the lawless deeds as he saw and heard. So kind of reaffirms what you were saying, that he was a righteous man, and he was found the things that were going on inside despicable. But it might be that, you know, sometimes we think we make decisions not totally ignorant of things that were the dangers ahead. I mean, I know somebody says, you know, mentions Las Vegas, we know some of the dangers of Las Vegas. And It's not like when somebody said Sodom, that Lot would not have been ignorant of some of the possibilities. Right. But I can also rationalize things really easily.
Oh, yeah.
I can always say, you know, I don't like that. I'm not supportive of those kind of things. And I can handle this. I'm going there to do my job or whatever. I don't go there with the intention of participating in anything.
Oh, wow.
But I can handle this. But, you
he
know,
can handle it.
You know, sometimes, you know, we don't really realize some of the, you know, obviously our families, are they going to be able to withstand this?
I mean, really, Lot escaped from this situation with his soul somewhat intact.
Yeah.
We can say that. What about everybody else?
Yeah.
What about everybody else?
Right.
That's, we have to consider those things.
And we can't forget 1 Corinthians 15, verse 33. Evil companionships corrupt good morals.
Yeah.
So it does matter who we're hanging out with, who we're doing things with, where we're going.
Since we're in high school, this is high school. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't look like we're right now, but it's high school. I'm going to say that if this offends somebody, so be it. I'm a male teacher. I'm glad I'm not in a high school right now because the junior middle school is not quite as bad. The way these girls dress around here, the way their parents let them leave the house, it's mind-blowing to me that as a parent that they allow these kids to leave the house looking the way they look.
Mm-hmm.
Well, for me as a Christian man, I'm in class, not going to look at everybody's stuff, you know, trying to teach class. And I don't, they're dirty and they're disgusting. I want nothing to do with them. But this environment.
That's what
you're
talking
about.
Yes. Oh, my God. I would never say something.
I'm here all week. I love you, brother. That's not good. Well, if I stand in the classroom just right, I can just see the board and not see the class with this side, I can do that.
There you go.
So, but this environment that everybody's in, you look, you know, you look anywhere, you can't go to, Walmart's a dangerous place to go. Checkout stands, and you know, you see so much just blatant nudity.
Right.
And you think about how that, you know, kind of, it really disgusts me. With what Lot was living with.
Yeah.
He was perplexed. It tormented his soul every day.
Right. And we've got to be careful as Christians not to become desensitized, because it's everywhere,
and that's the hard, that's the difficult thing. Why didn't he just move? I mean, I don't mean if it's that bad, why not move? Or do something, poke his eyes out, you know, that would work, I guess, but I don't know. It's just there are so many things that could have been done differently here, but because of his unselfishness, the lack of unselfishness, he stayed. From what it appears, now, I could be wrong, but right here, why not? If it was that bad, why not just move?
Well,
and that's hard. I mean, people have to sometimes are working and they become Christians. They're working in jobs that they know they really should have, but they're tied to that. They can't leave it. They have to have income, and it torments them that way. I mean, I know people get in situations that are difficult.
Well, and sometimes you're put in. Sometimes you don't have a lot of control about the environment that you have to work in. Sometimes we do, and we just don't think it through. You know, Lot made a choice, and there's nothing in the story that says Lot was forced to go that direction.
No,
this is not some situation he ended up because it was just the environment where the hand that he was dealt. These are. I mean, I think it's deliberate. The story is told so that we see people making choices where one man decides to trust God and the other guy is trusting in himself. So we can see there are consequences to those kind of bad choices. God doesn't tell us that we're supposed to be monks and live in, some type of convent or monasteries and separate ourselves from the world that way. At the same time, that doesn't justify making decisions that are going to be, just being not considerate of trying to walk after the Lord.
Yeah.
And when he goes down towards Sodom, it's a decision that was not with the Lord first.
That was an excellent segue into our next point. Top of the hour, you wanted.
You're listening to Scott Mitchell, Let the Bible Speak, WBRO 89.9 FM, broadcast from beautiful Marengo, Indiana.
Now I've got Mikey, I've got Michael Stout here, Michael W, I got Mikey B, and got MD. Over there, I'm like, we got lots of people there, I got everybody got the nickname. First time I said Mikey B, he looked at me with this, like, saw a look, he said, no one's ever called me Mikey B before. So anyway, that was, then I knew I had to keep going with that. So anyway, so you mentioned following God, or trying to do that, and so my next point was he lacked this spiritual mind, or spiritual concern. And it was, let me ask you this, is there a command, and was there a command in Lot's life that said, thou shalt not move to Sodom? No. But godly principles said,
you should not move to Sodom. Not so, a good decision.
And you were on a couple of weeks ago when it was talking about gambling, and I really appreciated your point was, is what we're doing violating a Bible principle or godly principle. And so when we look at that, was what Lot was doing, was that violating godly principles? And I think it was.
Yes, absolutely.
And so when we make those decisions without considering God, which we've all done, when we put ourselves in peril. And I think he put himself in peril and his family in peril. We've seen what happened because of this. When we, you know, Romans 14:16-23 talks about considering a weaker brother. You know, that's talking about conflict there. And you know, even if you really think you're right, rather than split a group, you step aside. And both people may really think they're right. You know, but rather than splitting that, then you know, humble yourselves and say, okay, and let it. You know, we're supposed to consider the weaker brother. Who were the weaker people in Lot's life that he did not consider?
His wife and his
kids. Right. Yeah, I mean, like I said, he got out of this mess. Bible calls him righteous. God assumed he was righteous.
Yeah.
With this, so like I said, somewhat intact. I'd say it was fairly tattered, but it was. He apparently had it strapped on somehow. They didn't, from all appearances here, they didn't. We know his wife didn't. I don't have daughters. For sure turned out, but it looks like right. Things didn't go well for him. So when we talk about a spiritual mind, we didn't see Lot pray, we didn't see Lot go to anybody and ask advice, we didn't see him do those things. My mother said this a long time ago to me. She goes, people do what they want to do.
Right.
People do what they want to do. And sometimes we can't do what we want to do. As Christians, we can't. And so how do we deal with these situations? You know, why do we have the jobs we have, the recreation we're part of, things like that? How can we as Christians deal with this? Same problem we've got. We've got lots of materialism around us today. Lots and lots. So how do we deal with it? I mean, we've got to have money to live. We've got to pay the bills, got to feed the kids and whatever. So how do we stay out of this rat race of materialism and with our lives today? How do we do this?
Well, in these situations, like I said, we have to go to school. We have to go to work. We have to provide for our families, as the scriptures say. But we've got to take the Lord with us. We are to shine Christ-like through us so others will see Christ living in us. That we're the example, and as we go out into the world and work and go to school or wherever it is that we go and do what we do, we have opportunities, and we meet people, and we can make an impact on that. And we had a great lesson last night about, you know, working for the Lord when we go to work, you know, with Brother Dan, and we've got to take those opportunities. You know, we come in contact with those people. You know, unfortunately, we're in an office situation like I'm in, I spend more time often with my coworkers than I do my family because I spend, you know, 8 to 10 hours a day with coworkers. So it would be a crime for me not to take that opportunity and to try to teach and to encourage and edify and try to lead those that are lost in my world to God.
Do you think sometimes, and we've probably all been guilty of this too, we should be more concerned about our children's popularity and those, and when they're about their, it can be about their souls sometimes. You know, get them to basketball, get them to baseball, do whatever, make sure they're dressed right, make sure they've got the right thing, make their, and so when, if that's the case, you know, do we want our children, do we want our children to be laughed at and ridiculed?
Certainly not.
But what if they are? What if they're laughed at and ridiculed for being a Christian? You know what I say? Hooray. Go, let's go. I mean, that's a compliment. But so many people are so concerned. You think about what Lot was concerned about and how those material things influenced him. When we look at our kids and we're more concerned that they're dressed right and are with the right kind of people than we, you know, popular kids, whatever. Is that being concerned for their souls? And we, you know, there's a verse in 2 Peter chapter 2, it talks, and I won't read all this, but verse 14 says, they have eyes full of adultery, insatiable for sin. They entice unsteady souls. All right? And they entice unsteady souls. They have hearts trained in greed. So, What do you think would be an example of an unsteady soul?
Well, there's probably somebody who has his heart is not totally fixed on the Lord. He's got some divided loyalties already. Kind of James talked about the double mind person. So when I'm trying to play every base and I'm trying to have a little bit of God, a little bit of this, a little bit of this, a little bit of this, I really don't have God at the center of my heart. So there are other things already competing.
Okay.
And so the person who's over here who sees that, it's pretty obvious. I mean, you can tell when there's someone who's playing religion, but they're really, you can see they're pursuing these other things. And they're fodder. I mean, they're, you know, this guy, I can lure him a lot easier because I know his heart is, he has some passion for money, or he has passion for this, passion for business. Now I know that he might be more likely to choose that over God.
So can our children be unsteady souls?
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah. Can young Christians, you know, people just come to know God, would they be considered unsteady souls?
Sure, there's some way they are, right?
And so we have lots of people that fit under that umbrella, right? Unsteady souls. And so we have to watch if we're being, here's the hard part, I think, for us, is being honest with ourselves and ask, what are we being enticed by? And are we displaying an unsteady soul?
You talking about as parents?
As Christians,
yeah.
Whoever.
Well, I said that because my kids watch me.
Yeah.
And they know if God is my first priority, and they know if there's something competing with him.
Yeah.
Right. And when I make decisions myself, like maybe Lot made his decision at that point, even though he was a righteous man and he hated the wickedness in it, when I make choices that demonstrate that I'm walking by sight and I'm in pursuit of this, they're, my kids see that. So anyway, I'm teaching something. So I mean, maybe I'm repeating something.
And they're watching. You know, we can't think that they're not watching, mm-hmm. and that we're pulling the wool over their eyes, mm-hmm. if you will, but they are watching, they're learning, and we are making an impact, whether we like it or not,
well,
whether it's good or bad.
And that it creates a situation where, when we consider, now, Lauren Galloway comes down on Wednesday night, he keeps making the point that that our souls are eternal, but we're in eternity right now. I mean, this is part of it. The eternal souls of our kids and the people we're around, where do we place that in terms of how we make our decisions? Like you said, if our kids are watching us and they see us kind of fumbling around, well, how important is God going to be to them?
And
that's the example. If that's the example they have, what can they possibly can bring out of that?
And you know, reading the Bible with our kids, mm-hmm. stories like Lot is important because that's what we have to build, what God is given to build into them, the kind of material that they need to develop that discernment.
Yeah.
And I mean, to help them connect those dots. You know, look at Lot, look at the decision he made. He was a righteous man, but look at the consequences of that decision. We need to show them some time in society when we see people making those kind of decisions. Here's a person who's got this decision, but look at the choice that they made. Look at where they led. I had one asking the other day regarding detective work, and they said, you know, would it be wrong, you know, if I was a detective and, you know, and I had to miss church on Sundays because I was investigating this case, and I had, you know, this is what a kid asks, you know, they're thinking, you know, would that be wrong? I mean, look at what I'm doing. I'm looking at this case. I'm trying to solve this murder. I'm trying to help this and that. Would it be wrong if I did that? You know, and I mean, this is a legitimate question. You know, like, wait a minute, I've preached on that before. You know, I've done that. But, you know, at moments, they raise these questions. So your moment has come where you have to say, well, you know, here are the choices that you have to make before you ever enter into that profession. Mm-hmm. Knowing that these are the outcomes and you have other choices, you know, when you make your decision at this point, be it honorable, you know, I want to be helpful or I want to help get crime off the streets or whatnot. You need to look at, there's other choices that are going to come down the pipe that you're going to have to make this, you know, decide. And do you want to do that now, ahead of time? Or do you want to find yourself in a situation later where now you have a profession that demands these things of you, and yet you didn't think that through before you got into
it? And that idea is important. We need to teach our kids to decide who they're going to be before situations come up.
And even in this situation or, you know, any decision that we have to make, we should ask, is this decision going to lead me to Christ or lead me away from Christ? So in whatever is posed, whatever decision we have to make,
you know, and those bracelets, those WWJD bracelets, what would Jesus do? Well, what did Jesus do? Those, if my kids ask me, well, can we do this? And if I say, well, do you think Jesus would have done something like that? Would that be out of character for Jesus? Well, should we do it then?
Yeah.
That principle of laying that out, that's important that we do that. And it's something that Lot didn't have. Apparently, Lot didn't have any of that ability to, any spiritual concern or mind to be able to ask those questions. And how's this going to influence me? Would Jesus live? Would Jesus move his family to here? I mean, that he didn't ask those questions. But we've got to be asking those questions.
That reminds me, going back just a little bit, when you asked, was Lot told, thou shalt not go to Sodom? Which the answer obviously is no, as we said. But I think a lot of people look at the Bible with the wrong attitude. They think it's a book of thou shalt not and thou shalt. You know, the things that we can do and cannot do. But we see that the entire book is a book of love. It is God's word. And it is leading us to heaven. Mm-hmm. Old Testament, as we're studying this example, you know, it is an example for us to learn from. We're learning the bad decisions that Lot made. And it's dangerous. You know, we might encounter it with our kids or someone out there may, where the kids will say, well, the Bible doesn't say not to do this. You know, when they're trying to just put their toe over that line. You know, you said don't cross that line, but they're just trying to, you know how kids are. They just edge closer and closer to see how close they can get to the edge without going over.
Yep.
You know, but it's the same situation, and that's the wrong attitude. It's like, well, it doesn't say, you know, so I must be able to do this or that and go here or there. Mm-hmm. But we see we've got to have that spiritual mindset, you know, and what would Christ do and establish those biblical principles and not look at it as like, well, I can't do this, I can't do that, you know, this and that, but it's a principle of life, how we live our lives, and everything we do should be in service to God.
Well, and I was thinking, and I'm sure the people that you saw Greg tired of hearing me do this.
I got it.
But when God sent his people into Canaan, he did not leave them ill-equipped to deal with the dangers there. In fact, when he, in Leviticus, which nobody likes to read, it doesn't seem like today. There's a couple of chapters, chapter 18 and 19. Chapter 19 is where Jesus found the passage, love your neighbor as yourself, one of his favorite places to go. But in these two chapters, just one, the Lord said to Moses, speak to the Israelites and say to them, I am the Lord your God, and you must not do as they do in Egypt, where you used to live, and you must not do as they do in the land of Canaan, where I'm bringing you. Yeah. Don't follow their practices. You must obey my laws. Be careful to follow my decrees. I am the Lord your God.
Yeah.
And then from there on, he has a lot of do nots in chapter 18. And I just think, well, why did he do that? Because there are so many things that he was He was giving him his wisdom. Mm-hmm. Here's a father sending his children, I'm going to give you this land, but there are some things you have to stay away from mm-hmm. to avoid becoming like the people of land. So there's a lot of do-nots,
yeah.
mm-hmm. and in chapter 19, there's a lot of do-nots, and then a lot of principles of how they're going to behave to create this distinctiveness.
So you have segued beautifully once again into the third point as far as concern for spiritual well-being of our family. With what you're talking about, what God was talking about, there was unavoidable stuff. You're going to see some things,
yeah.
and you're going to hear some things, yeah. but you can't do those things.
Right.
So are we all surrounded by unavoidable things like that?
Oh, absolutely.
Sure. I mean, billboards, magazines,
absolutely.
You know, whatever. So we have those things. You mentioned 1 Corinthians 15, 33, and 34, you know, this, that bad company does corrupt good morals. I'm concerned about those unavoidable things influencing me and my kids and people I'm around, you know, the billboards, the magazine. We were at Dollar General last year with, I don't know, you know, Kent Baumgartner or not, he's a Christian, they came up to camp, bring him up there. We were standing in the checkout lane last year, and he had a little girl, and she's a cute little bugger, and I was standing there talking to Kent, and I wasn't paying attention to her because she's on my blind side that you mentioned earlier, and Kent said, hey, look, she was standing, the magazine covers were behind us, and she was standing, like, kind of, so she was covering them up for us, so we wouldn't see them. And so I bet that's there.
That she was helping you out.
So she was helping us out. That was one of those unavoidable things. That's my biggest concern. Just pick it up and say hello. Don't put him on there. Pick it up and say howdy.
What's up, Theron?
Is it Theron? So
I'm just
she was covering up the magazine.
Yeah, but my concern is not the unavoidable things for us. My concern this morning is the avoidable things
right.
that we do on purpose that we should not be doing.
No.
Yeah.
I know on the boards are worse.
Right. How good are most TV commercials?
Oh,
no.
Not at all.
I mean, you know, the little thing.
They make it enticing. They're selling to you.
So when we talk about unavoidable things and avoidable things, what are we going into on purpose and influencing people we're around? Black TV shows.
Yeah.
Music we listen to.
I mean, it's our decision
what
channel to turn to,
yeah.
or what music to listen to, or, you know, what stores we go to, whatever.
Yeah. Now, the situation with Lot, let's get back in Sodom, was that avoidable?
Absolutely.
Sure.
He wasn't forced
to
go to
Sodom.
So this
is something that he did on purpose with an intent. Now, you're turning some pages. Are you getting? You finding something over there?
No, but
we need to be considering what we're doing and how we're doing it and what we're exposing ourselves to simply by being part of, you know, like TV shows. It used to, we could turn the knob, you know, and it's now, you know, with everything we've got, computers, and we just got to hit the breaker and shut the whole thing down because there's so many things we're flooding our houses with. That we've got to be careful about, and so I haven't always done this. I need to be more conscious of, do I have a spiritual mind and concern for my family with what I'm watching, with what we're doing, and where we're going, where we're going to see, and make sure that that's first in my mind, not second or third. So you got your forehead all furry. You look like you got something you want to say.
I was just listening to you. It caught my attention while I was reading the story in Genesis 19, when in the encounter between Lot and the men in the city, that they said to him, "Get out of our way." This is chapter 19, verse 9. They replied, and they said, "This fellow came here as an alien,
mm-hmm.
and now he wants to play the judge. We'll treat you worse than them." And they kept bringing pressure on Lot and move forward, break down the door. Couple of things. It's interesting that they called him an alien.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was a person who didn't belong.
He was
a foreigner.
Still, after all these years.
Yeah, so he's been there, and so there's a sense in which that defines what we're supposed to be in this world. God, and I'm doing Peter on Wednesday nights at Salisbury, and in that book, First Peter, he says, you are aliens, you're strangers, you're exiles in this world. which is the way we're supposed to be. We're supposed to be extraterrestrial. We're living in a place that we don't belong. To get a kind of segue to your point, we have to communicate that to our kids. Yes. They're to be aliens, strangers, and if we don't, if we just look, if we don't, if we are so much like the culture around us that we don't look any different at all, something's not right.
Yep.
And so he said you're aliens, and you're trying to play the judge. Clearly, the culture of Sodom did not welcome Lot. Because he wasn't endorsing the things that they endorsed. It's kind of the same thing it should be for us. And we are these aliens, these strangers who are traveling through. We're in our culture, but this is not supposed to be our culture. You know, we are supposed to be countercultural. And I think it's really hard for the kids to relate to that. You know, something you said earlier, parents work really hard sometimes they want have their kids a part of this play or a part of this sports or a part of this and a part of that. We think we need to make them well-rounded kids. Well, I mean, there's a lot of risk in that. You know, the more you engage them because you want them to be like the culture, the more they're likely to adopt the virtues as well. So it just, to me,
I'm teaching a combined teenage class at camp, and my 17-year-old daughter, well, she was 17, now she's 18 now. I asked her what I should teach, and she said, you should teach the kids to make their faith their own.
Okay.
That's pretty deep, you know. But so we're going to talk about that on Tuesday with those kids, in terms of, you know, standing on their own 2 feet. And that's going to be harder if mom and dad are doing the right things.
Well, absolutely.
You know, you think about that and how it affected our kids. This idea of, I'm not lost my thought. I had two thoughts, I lost one of them. Anyway, if that could happen to anybody, I guess. This go back to this command that thou shalt not. There's not a command that says thou shalt not watch this TV show. Thou shalt not listen to this radio station. Thou shalt not go to this whatever, this party. Thou shalt not do this. Bible principle says you don't do those things. But how do those kids learn those Bible principles?
Once again, ask ourselves, is that show leading me to Christ or away from it?
Now I got my thought back. You mentioned had an interesting talk with some students the other day. They were talking about a movie they watched. They said, have you seen this movie? I said, no. I said, what's it rated? They said, all right. I said, I don't watch those. And I said, I don't want my kids watching those things. And they said, well, you will be by yourself. You can watch it by yourself. I said, no. I said, if it's not okay for my kids, it's not okay for me. I'm not doing that. Well, that just for them. What? And so that idea of doing, I've heard this thing, you know, a true test of your character is who you are when you're by yourself. You know, what do you do when you're by yourself? What do you watch when you're by yourself? What are you involved in when you're by yourself? Matt?
All right. I just want to add here, you're talking about TV shows and stuff, and I've gotten away from watching a lot of stuff because the language and everything else, it's almost like a substitute for actually writing a good show or movie that they just, you know, will throw an F-bomb in here or something, or we'll have a nude scene or something, and it's completely not related to the storyline, not necessary in any way. And there's a lot of stuff I'm just like, wow, that was just totally not even necessary.
And most of it, it didn't need it. It's there because that's what people want. Our culture
thrown in there to appeal to the masses.
So,
unfortunately, that's our society.
We'd rather teach our kids that is not the case. And that idea of, showing our kids who we are, you know, if they walk in and catch us reading our Bibles, how bad would that be, you know? Or if they walk in and catch us on the computer doing something else, what are we doing? When we, as adults, and people will know why we're losing our kids to the world, because the adults aren't being who they're supposed to be, that's why. When we waffle on the truth, when we teach that a day's not a day, or that, you know, we talk about evolution like it's something real, and they see hypocrisy in our lives, why would the Bible matter? Why? It doesn't. And so we've got to be, I make mistakes. I apologize to my kids and my wife on a daily basis. It's been really tired lately. I've been a little grumpy, and I hear my tone sometimes with my kids, and well, there's no wonder they're talking like they are, because they sound just like me. And so we've got to be careful of those things and try to make those corrections as we go. But that's part of that having a spiritual concern. When we do something like that, we've got to go to them and say, hey, you know what? Dad shouldn't have done that. Dad shouldn't have said it that way. But if I say, you know what? I'm an adult. I do what I want. You need to get away from me. What is that? That's not teaching them anything.
I think we would be amiss if we didn't especially throw it out there for young parents or parents of young children to realize, you know, as we all grow older and we're working our jobs, we're working toward retirement. We're investing in our retirement, so, you know, in our later years. But we've got to realize the most important investment as a parent is in your children, because you, granted, they're going to be your child as long as you live, as long as they live, but you have them maybe 18 years to have that impact. Not that you're not going to have an impact on them once they're grown and gone, but it matters. And that time investment, that spiritual investment in your children, you get that one chance. You've got that X number of years. And many years ago, Jenny and I, we realized that, you know, we were just running and going and doing this and that. And we realized that we've only got like 5 more years before Jacob, our oldest, was going to be on his own. It's like, we've got to pull in the reins. And, you know, this is the last close 5 years that we're going to have, and realize that you've got to take advantage. You've got to make that investment in your children. You've got to teach them. And like you said, then they, when they are on their own, then their faith will be proven. They have to have their own faith. But it's our job to teach them and to establish that foundation.
I'm not really good at daddy at a distance.
Yeah.
That's tough. That's difficult, because I've got two down at Bowling Green, and they're good girls, and they're doing well spiritually, but it's hard.
It's
not, because we've been with them every day. I try to give all the baths and put them to bed and sing all the songs and read all the books. And I made those little fountainheads, you know, with the little hair. I did all that thinking I would try to do enough. Wow, it still wouldn't. I still feel like I should.
I've realized that as my kids get older, I pray more for them now than I ever have.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
We just have to fill them up to work on.
Yeah, we got those.
I mean, they're going to be on their own, and they're going to have that so deeply embedded in their being that when it comes to time to make these choices that they have to make, it's clear which direction they need to.
Yeah.
They need to be asking first, does the Bible say anything about this?
Yeah. And here's really, I use this verse. I mean, I've got people at New Salisbury getting tired. I'm sure my wife's getting tired of hearing this. Maybe not, but in Galatians 2, and I know she's saying, oh, it's verse 20 again. look, if we, the only way we can do this the way God wants us to do it is to every day be more like Jesus and teach our kids to do the same thing. Galatians 2:20 says, I've been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. And the life I now live, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. So we're at Judgment Day. There is not going to be a checklist of good and bad things we've done. God forgives our sins as far as East is from the West. He forgets them. He's not going to have a list of all these things. The judgment's going to be, do we look like Jesus or not? That's what we're going to be working toward. And if our kids see us working towards that, and if our family sees us working toward that, if our coworkers see us working toward that, and trying to be more like him and act like him, they'll come to us and say, why, when that happened, I couldn't have done what you did. Or okay, when this happened, how did you deal with this? They're going to see those things and ask those questions instead of, well, I thought you said you were a Christian. And what do we look like? It's not about all the, and we get so wrapped up in all these, you know, who am I looking like? Who am I, you know, would you, and that's the concept we got to get through. I know we've got about 1 minute.
It goes back to Genesis 18. We didn't talk a whole lot about that, but
no.
In 18, God decided Sodom and Gomorrah, they were so wicked, he was going to rain down fire and brimstone on them. But Abraham went to God, is like, will you save them for 50 people? God says that he would save Sodom and Gomorrah if there were 50 righteous, then if they could find 45, 40, 30, 20, finally 10, and realized that there weren't even 10 righteous in Sodom and Gomorrah for him to save them. So we've got to realize, in the end, are we going to be among those righteous to be saved?
I'll be able to distinguish us from the cities in which we live. He did deliver Lot out.
And that's, and we've got to be trying. You know, and if you're out there, wondering, why does it matter so much? Why do we care? Why does it matter? Here's why. You know, Jesus, God prayed. You know, God paid the ultimate price for us to have the opportunity to go to heaven. It's not a guarantee.
This world is more like Sodom. Mm-hmm. And Jesus came here to lead us out of Sodom.
Yeah, right.
And we've got to be following him to get out. If we don't follow him, we're going to be left right in the midst of him.
Yeah. I'm going to read Hebrews chapter 6, 9 through 12. And we'll probably have a couple closing comments. Mikey's got to get on the road driving the train today. Not Mike B, Mike W. So, and Hebrews chapter 6, verse 9 says, though we speak in this way, yet in your case, beloved, we feel sure of better things, things that belong to salvation. For God is not unjust so as to overlook your work and the love that you have shown for his name in serving the saints, as you still do. And we desire each one of you, to show the same earnestness, to have the full assurance of hope until the end, so that you may not be sluggish, but imitators of those who through faith and patience inherit the promises. That's what we want for everybody. So if you're out there and you're thinking, I don't know how to do any of this, I don't know what to do, call me, 812-620-4034, come to El Bethel, 9:30 Sunday morning for Bible class. Find the building in New Salisbury, there north of the light, and find Mikey B over there. If you live on 66, find Michael W. Stout.
In
the log cabin, right before the county line, go north on 66. Folks, we want to help you. We really do. We want to help you. And we love all of you. We want everybody to know that God loves you and he's done everything he can to get us there. We just have to make it a priority. We have to make this important in our lives because nothing else matters. If we lose this,
we lost it all.
And Lot lost it all, folks. Look at it. Read the story. Go look at it. And I'm going to beg y'all, as I always do, just pick up your Bibles and let the Bible speak.
Amen. Thanks for letting us.
Thanks for being here, guys. I appreciate it. That hour went pretty quick.